Hey, y'all, I got a question for you. What's a piece of gear that you maybe have unintentionally overlooked in your rig throughout the years? Well, for me, it's always been guitar cables. I figured it just goes from the guitar to the amplifier or the guitar to the pedal board to the amp, and if one breaks, whatever, I'll just go buy another one. No big deal. Thanks to the fine folks at Runway Audio, though, I have finally seen the light. Runway Audio is based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is awesome for me because that's right down the road. But it's awesome for you as well because Runway has the best cable on the market. And what makes it the best, you ask? Well, it has the lowest capacitance of any cable on the market right now, at 20 picofarads per foot. And pretty much all that capacitance is the ability to store an electrical charge. The lower the capacitance is, the less tone that it sucks from your cable from your guitar on the way to your amplifier. So if you're in the market for anything cable-related, whether it's instrument cables, patch cables, XLR cables, speaker cables, power cables, you name it, Runway Audio has got you covered. And if you go down to my link tree, click the link for Runway Audio, any purchasing you will do, I will get a little bit of a kickback from that, which is always appreciated. So check out all the awesome stuff that Runway Audio is doing and pick something up to get the best tone possible. This episode today is brought to you by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the finest strings on the market. For me, it has been the Orbiters that have been my absolute go-to ever since they have come out, and that's their coated electric strings. But if the coated thing's not your thing, totally get it. The Signatures and the Broadways in their electric line, top-notch quality. For acoustic guitars, they have their Naturals and their Brights, along with the Foxwoods, which are their coated Fosper Bronze. For all you bassists out there, too, they have the Signatures and the Rangers. Full disclosure, the link down below is my affiliate link, so if you would like to check out Stringjoy, click that link down below. Not only will you be getting the finest guitar strings on the market, but you'll also be helping out this podcast, which I greatly appreciate. So, head on over to Stringjoy today. I'm not even close to the tip of the iceberg of all the awesome things that Stringjoy does, so click the link down below and check them out for yourself. Welcome back to Man the Helm Podcast. Today, Mike and I are back, and Mike, you brought your pedal board. Your more ergonomical, economical, whatever E word you want to
call I wouldn't pick economical. I would pick ease of use. How about that
E word? Ease of use is very good. The problem is we were kind of messing around with it before we got started with the show today, and it's funny, man, because I had the same thing that happened to me when I got the HX Stomp. Sounds great. The tones in it are good. It's just, I'm with you, man. I would rather have knobs to turn and physical pedals to, you know.
Yeah, not having the actual physical amp is definitely a new thing. I mean, I get it. I mean, for this band, it makes it easier on everyone since no one actually has an amp to bring. It's all plugged in, all in-ears. So, I mean, it's super simple, makes everything fantastic because I'm not having to lug a 60-pound amp and a probably 60-pound pedal board up there. But at the same time, it's still an interesting dynamic that I never really found myself going back to. Because, I mean, for a while, you know, I had the Line 6 amp and the full digital lineup. Yeah. But it's just... once you get used to analog and that's all you know and all you want to run, it's definitely a change of pace to run something that's clearly as far away from it as you could just about get.
Yeah, for sure. And so I'm going to post some pictures of it. So if you guys don't already do this, you should follow Man the Helm on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all the good YouTubes and stuff like that as well. But yeah, I'll post a picture of it. But just for people that aren't going to get online and check out the picture, let's talk about what's on the board.
So it is a Amplitube Tonex. So amp and cab sim. different effects. I think it's IK Multimedia or something like that. Mm-hmm. That makes it. And I mean, it's fantastic for what it is. Great response. Plenty of different patches to make you have your cleans of cleans and dirties of dirties.
Oh, so, yeah. Everybody likes the dirty to dirties.
Yeah, the dirty to dirties. Onlyfeet.com.
The Onlyfeet. Goes down best website. Shirt might be coming in the future for that.
Yeah. But, I mean, just the amount of patches, what the pedal can do, it's fantastic as a platform, even if you are not used to working with this type of platform.
Well, see, what I liked about it, I haven't done a whole lot of research into the Tonex stuff. I mean, I kind of know it's like an all-in-one.
Right.
It's a very general overview of it. But especially for what the band that you're kind of playing in with that, I mean, if you're not using a crap ton of effects and you need something to sound like a record,
it's either clean or dirty.
Yeah, but the thing is with that, clean or dirty, you know, you're going like, some of the songs you've talked to me about that you're playing have a very specific, like, that 90s Mesa Boogie sort of.
Either 90s Mesas or, you know, 70s Marshalls.
Right.
So it's, I mean, and I have pretty much everything literally on a board within two patches of each other. So,
yeah.
I mean, it fits a lot of bills, and it's just so much easier to get around with, especially trying to navigate different places with a walking assistance.
Right.
Having to not worry about an amp is a nice thing.
I believe it. You know, and that's the sacrifice you're making though, right? For the true analog, you know, feel and tone of a amplifier.
Right. And I mean, you know, having an amp in this case, because of the amount of members, the songs that we're doing, not having an amp is a little rough because you don't really have a monitor, but you have in-ears. Sure. I mean, it's full in-ears for everyone. So whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that within itself I've always enjoyed in-ears. It always has its pros and cons for me as well. But I will say, having in-ears, there's no question, especially playing live, you have a mix in your head that is never going to change. You know, there's not any of these like, hey, man, I need you to turn up a little bit, I can't hear you. Or if it is, it's super easy to do. It's not subjective to what you need to hear. You can just be like, hey, I need more bass. Or, hey, I need more vocal. Or, hey, I need whatever in an in-ear rig.
You know what I mean? One of the nice things with this, with the pedal too, is just because you go to 10 doesn't mean it is a 10.
Sure.
So you're not dealing with overdriving the amp and then using overdrive or distortion or what overdriving an amp is going to do to any other effect.
Yeah.
So if you don't need that, then that's why I built it. It fits perfectly for what it is. And of course the next thing is so I don't have to bring 20 guitars with me, because we play everything from C standard to regular standard and everywhere in between.
Yeah.
So that the Digitech drop tune, I was not a believer until the other guitarist in the band had one and I messed with it and I was thoroughly impressed. I was far more impressed than even though I knew that it definitively worked.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just how well did it work and if it caused any weird issues with the tracking.
See, that's the always thing. Like, after playing with it just now for maybe, 5-10 minutes, you know, I was really impressed with everything down to about, that fifth semitone?
Fifth or sixth, yeah. That's where it starts getting a little iffy, but then again, if you're playing that low, typically, you're already just having guitars that low.
Sure. That's what I was about to say. You know, but as far as, like, dude, that half step down or full step down, like, 90% of this music that I would be playing would be in those two tunings. A standard, a half step, full step.
Yeah.
You know?
And also, you don't have to stand on top of it to get the pedal to turn on.
Yeah, you know, funny story. I thought he had I didn't realize it was a momentary switch, so here I am trying to break Mike's Digitech drop pedal here about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I'm looking at him. He looked at me like, what are you doing?
About to get punched in the face over here, man. And well-deserved, too. Well-deserved. But, no, I mean, I really dig it. That's one of those things that I'm kind of like you with it. I kind of didn't really pay much attention to it. I think I need to get one.
I mean, they're cool, and they really do fit the bill. But, you know, so I've played with a Whammy before.
Yeah.
The Digitech Whammy.
Mm-hmm.
It does not do that great of a job, in my opinion. It does what it does good, but I'm just not a fan of the tracking.
Yeah. Well, my biggest thing is the footprint for it on a pedal board. It's just it's huge. Massive. You know, and
then they have the one that has the drop and
the
Whammy.
Don't get me wrong. It's super cool for applications that I'm not going to use.
Tom Morello.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. You can make some cool stuff. And don't get me wrong, I would love probably to sit in my room and...
Oh, goof around with
goof
it.
Goof around with it all day. I couldn't find I've played with them a lot, but I couldn't find like a practical application for it. I mean, I will get into this a little later because I wanted to kind of talk about this too, but like I focus more on playing the instrument than playing the pedal, which I know, like, I love watching people that use effects like that because I don't really think about the guitar that way.
Yeah.
They think about the pedal as an extension of the instrument or an instrument within itself. You know what I mean?
Well, it's almost like if you're first learning to be or play like synth.
Yeah.
And you start with the basic keyboard that has a synth option.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can move on to maybe an organ that has a synth option or just use an organ because, you know, it's going to have the different divisions, it's going to have different effects, it's going to have different things going for it. But like whenever you start getting to true synth and you start having to plug all your own patches and you got to have power amplifiers, preamp amplifier, like there's a lot that goes into it. And it's like it can be as complex or as simple as you want.
For sure.
But at the end of the day, like it all makes sense to someone that isn't probably the person that's looking at it for the first time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I get that. I don't know, man. It's just one of those things where the drop I feel like would be very effective for me, especially gigging. Because like you just said, man, you know, I always usually bring two guitars to a gig regardless, but I wouldn't have to bring six, for instance, if I wanted, you know, some crazy drop tune stuff like in C or C sharp or something like that.
Well, like I said, and it's a beefy enough pedal to have you stomp on it like six or seven times trying to mash the button into the floor.
To be fair, it was one very kind of starting to get forceful stomp. I wasn't sitting there just like, get it. You know, like it's fine. Look, man, I would have bought you a new one. I know you'd have been pissed with me, but I'd have bought you a new one.
Well,
or I'll just give you the Jacaris. And
I already have a Jacaris.
Well, you can have another one.
I don't need another one.
Yeah, you always need another one. That's the quan of distortions.
Don't worry. If you break it, I'll take the gearbox.
Oh, fine. Yeah. Good luck. I won't play the same without that.
Will I become the Digitech drop tune? But anywho, and then I have the MXR ISO Mini Brick.
Oh, yeah.
Which, fantastic. A Boss, was it the CU3? I think that's what it is.
Yeah, TU3.
TU3, excuse me.
I want a CU3.
Anywho. but... best tuner, in my opinion, that's ever been made.
Yeah, it's a workhorse. It always works, except yours.
It'll work again. I just have to figure out what's causing the issue. Yeah. Which sucks, because I practically pulled that thing out of a box brand new.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on with it, but simple enough. If anything, I'll shove a 9-volt in it and call it a day.
Right.
It's not like I use it that often anyways. Who believes in tuning? Tuning's for losers. Anyways, But then I have a patch that runs to, typically it's just an old Dunlop wah that I've had for years and years and years.
Yeah, so right. You get your slash on.
My one slash song that I have to play, which seems like in every freaking band, Slither.
Dude, you cannot get away from it. It's either Slither or it's fucking Sweet Child of Mine. And it's just like, oh my God. Can we pick another Guns N' Roses song to play?
Can we pick another Slash song to play?
Any of them.
Was like, even that one song with Adam Levine, which I can't remember the name of right off the top of my head. But I was like, even that is a better song, and that one is extremely overplayed.
Yeah, that is my only reservation, because I see, you know, posts on Facebook for our local area about, you know, oh, we need a guitar player, we need this, we need that. And you kind of look at the band a little bit, and it's like, oh, it's a cover band. It's like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Especially if the gentlemen are over 40, because I already know 99.9% of their songs, and I don't want to play a single one of them ever again.
Well, it's like, I was like, you could literally pick Fat Bomb Girls. You could pick Welcome to the Jungle. And I mean, even those are overplayed as it is.
Yeah.
But at least it's something better than, when I learned Sweet Child, right?
When you were like 12?
No, like a couple months ago.
Oh.
When I played that.
You weren't one of those Guitar Center kids?
No.
Just kidding.
I just never really was crazy about Guns N' Roses. I mean, that's fair. They're fine for what they did, and I have no issue if you like them, you know, cool.
No, I do.
But... he's ready for all the smoke today.
That's fine.
But it just never fascinated me to learn that stupid opening lick.
Yeah, well, it's a practice exercise.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, whatever. But anyways, but learned it for the VFW gig.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, whatever. Got to play to the crowd. Worked for us. But it's like learning that entire song, especially just learning just the lead. It turns the song, except for during the verses, into one massive guitar solo.
Yeah.
And stuff like that just doesn't interest me. Now, yeah. If you have phrasing that you have in your song that sets up your melody or your harmony, I don't look at that as a guitar solo. But when you literally are just playing relatively the same thing, to play the relative same thing, and it's all practically the E minor scale, you know, or E minor pentatonic, it's not fascinating to me. It's not fascinating for me to sit there and play it over and over and over again. Is it cool to learn? Yeah, sure. You know, and for people that learn it, good on you. You know, actually learn the entire thing the right way. Yeah, cool. Awesome.
Right.
But so, if that is your magnum opus, I'm sorry to say, but there's even harder Guns N' Roses songs,
yeah,
versus that one.
Well, I think the hot take out of this conversation is you think Slash's phrasing sucks. So, I mean, we can just move on. No, I'm just giving you shit.
No, Slash is a great guitarist for what he did in Guns N' Roses and what he does on his own. But
yeah,
is he one of my guitar heroes? No.
No, and I think it's one of those things. I really love those solo albums that he did when he brought in artists for, you know, the vocals and stuff like that. Or even that instrumental one he did with David Grohl is, like, killer.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't want the diehard Slash fans to come out and be, you know, crazy about anything, because we're not saying he sucks as a guitar player. It's just, we get it. He's in Guitar Hero. You probably played Guitar Hero and played Guns N' Roses songs, and you wanted to play real guitar and learn Guns N' Roses songs, which is fine. You and I both have played particular Guns N' Roses songs so much too that I think it just turns us off to wanting to consume any of that music anyway.
Well, I'm pretty sure, and I mean, it's not like I can speak for him. It's not like I even know him. But I'm pretty sure Slash is probably at the same point anyways.
I guarantee it. I guarantee it.
Of being known as oh, he's the guitarist for Guns N' Roses. Because no one really ever, at least in my consumption of media, never really talks about him being a solo artist. He does. They consider him the Guns N' Roses guitarist that now does solo stuff.
Yep, yep.
And like when he did Velvet Revolver, it was just a super group thing.
Dude.
Like no one really puts any, like people are like, oh, you're being disrespectful because you're saying that, you know, he's not this amazing Jesus Christ of guitar. And it's like, he's not. And I don't think that necessarily he would think so either.
I highly doubt he would. And that's, I mean, I don't mean to be speaking for him like you said as well, but I mean, it's almost like that band, name any band that has their hit song. They most likely, after a tour cycle, hate. They probably hated it before. But they hate playing that song just because it's over and over and over and over
again. Well, I think whenever you look at, like, Miles Kennedy, mm-hmm. is that it? For Alter Bridge?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at him, he has his hand in so many different cookie jars of just constantly on the move. And it's like, is that a bad thing for Alter Bridge and like for Mark Tremonti? It's like, maybe, but maybe not. Because if you're keeping your music fresh because you're not writing for a particular album for a particular band, and you're just writing music because you want to write music, then I think that you're far more successful in the long run than if you just pump out 13 albums and then you look at each other and you want to kill each other.
Yeah, well, the thing I think with, like, speaking for like Miles Kennedy and Mark Tremonti, their solo albums are phenomenal, just as well as the Alter Bridge albums. You know what I mean? It's never, and the thing about Alter Bridge that I've noticed is that for a while, especially with that first album, it was like, oh, Creed 2.0.
Yeah.
Until they actually started like playing and showing people that.
Well, I think that they had to kind of lean into it a little bit.
Oh, of course.
And plus, when you're coming off of a band that got so big off of that,
yeah,
you kind of have to lend yourself a little bit closer to that mindset and then grow from there. And that gives you more of an organic kind of build.
Sure.
I mean, if I had a successful band doing, you know, polka covers,
I bet it would be so successful.
It'd be, we'd be the Zydeco Zoots. I don't know. But anyways. But if that's what you became successful off of, you either have to go so 180 with it, or you have to kind of blend your previous style to the new style you want.
Yeah, like you said, lean into it a bit.
Yeah, and it's like it there's no wrong or right way to do something. I mean, there's so many different ways to do to be successful in music. Does that mean that everyone's going to make it? Hell no. Would say less than 95%.
Well, what do you mean? Like, so that's the thing that I hate when people say, I want to make it in the industry. What does make it in the industry mean? Does make it in the industry mean you want to be fucking Taylor Swift?
Yeah, well, then your name's Travis Kelce. But, oh, well. That's a different story.
That is a very different story. Hang on just a second. Ignore this part. There you go. Hey, it's like 10:30 in the morning, cracking a beer, right? No, I'm just kidding. About to go punch some walls. You guys already know what I'm drinking right now.
No, my name's Kyle.
Kyle, and I like to punch walls. But no, that's the thing that I always love hearing that from people. It's like, well, I'm trying to make it in the industry. It's like, well, what does make it in the industry mean? Does make it in the industry mean that you make a living? Because you can make a living doing thousands of jobs in the music industry.
Well, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is making it as far as music is being like a successful touring band. Okay. I'm not saying you got to sell out stadiums. I'm just saying like you have to make enough of a living to be able to tour and record music.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I mean, you know, I could be a naked cowboy standing in New York City playing an acoustic guitar and I've made it, baby. But it doesn't really mean the same as
I mean, you could probably pay the bills with that.
Only feet.
Only feet. No, I understand what you're saying. The thing is, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things that I hate when people say it's you know, I've had, I guess, more jaded people that I've, for some reason, been talking to here lately that are just like, oh, yeah, it's just not happening. Oh, yeah, it's just not happening. It's like, well, why is it not happening? Why aren't you getting to your goal? You know what I mean? And for me, I hate to oversimplify it, but at least from my experience, it's that accountability on yourself. You're not pushing yourself how you should be. If you have a goal you want to achieve, there's that 7-step process that you're supposed to do, according to, I can't remember, whatever critical thinker came up with that. But it works because you're holding yourself accountable and you're setting tangible goals that you can actually achieve.
Well, if you hold yourself accountable, one of the main things that people suck at, especially now, no one knows how to sell themselves anymore.
Dude.
Like, I don't mean sell out. I mean, go and present yourself as a professional, whatever the hell you want to do. You want to be a professional tennis player or pickleball player or playing with pickles player. You know, congratulations. Hey, you do you. You do you, boo. But well, at the end of the day, like...
So this is the conversation I've had with other people that are in the creative field, right? Why do I care? If I'm a consumer of this, why do I care? You can't just put your new fucking single out and be like, hey, here's my new single, like you see everybody do.
Yeah.
Why do I care? Why should I care? I got into a heated civil disagreement with a very pompous, opinionated musician at work the other night. Because, like we talked about last week, I've been diving into Sleep Token. Because, you know, you talked about some stuff with me and told me I need to check them out. And I haven't really checked out a whole lot of stuff. I really dig them. And he for some reason, absolutely hates them. And I figured out why. He doesn't understand why they just exploded. Well, there's not just one thing that made them just explode. No. And that's what I was trying to explain to him. But at the same time, I said, you know why I really like Sleep Token? So they kind of hooked me with the music. The music is good. That's the bare minimum bottom line standard. You got to put out good music.
Yeah, if you put out random, you know, a track of farts, like it's no.
Right. Now here's the other thing with Sleep Token. The music's got you. You're down with the music. What do you start to do with the band? You start to research the band. You find out this whole story, this whole lore, they have a reason to have you listen to their music, and now you think about it from a completely different perspective. They're making you want to understand what the trilogy of albums they put out means.
Well, so the first one is not nearly as quote unquote lore heavy.
Sure.
The second one really delves into it, and the third is almost an explosion of it.
Right.
It's like, but the main thing with them is that the way that they marketed themselves, when they knew the iron was hot,
yep,
they kept it going because they'd release a song, and then a couple weeks later, they'd release another and another until the full album was out. And then they would just drop the album.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go right back into a development cycle. And then there'd be something else. And then there'd be videos of the music that was just played. And then it would be the touring that they were doing. Like, as far as an active band, I mean, they've been active since, I think it was 2014, 2013.
Sure.
It's not like they showed up in 2023.
You just heard about it.
And exploded in 2024. Like, it's been a quite consistent time for them. And people were talking back in 2019 whenever they saw them at the beginning of a like house show. It was like three bands and they were just the first guys up there, and it's like, oh, cool, whatever. And like 3 years later, they're playing arenas and they're the co-headliner or just underneath the headliner, and now they're the headliner.
Yeah.
So if you find music that brings people to you. I mean, because it's a mix. It's almost a mix of genres. It's very pop heavy.
Yeah, it is.
It's super pop heavy. It is lots of clean singing. It's lots of more orchestral chords, but it still has the heaviness. So it's kind of, if you like metal music, but you don't like pop music, you might like Sleep Token, even though you don't necessarily like pop music, and the vice versa as right. well. So it's not necessarily you got to market to every genre, but if you market yourself in a pop genre, pop still predominates most of music.
Well, and that's what I tried to explain to him. I said the reason, one of the big reasons they blew up is when the summoning was starting to be used for people on TikTok.
Oh, yeah. The social media presence, even before that song came out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was building and building and building, because I was watching, I went back and, oh my God. I wish I remembered his name, but he did like an incredible, like, 50-minute video on this whole topic.
Yeah.
And he was showing like the subscriber rates, the view counts, and everything, like all the statistics of like when this happened, this it like what happened and causality and effect. So he went through that whole video kind of explaining like how they used the algorithm and marketing on their side to boost the algorithm to get more eyes on their product.
Sure, absolutely.
So it's like you can't just do that if you're just, here's a song. Like if you release a song every 2 weeks, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden, boom.
Exactly.
It's a very calculated process by musicians now, and you're seeing more people do this too.
Yeah.
Like even Beyonce's country album, she did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit. Now, of course, comparing Sleep Token to Beyonce apples and oranges, because Beyonce is, well, Beyonce.
Well, but the thing is still, it's still the same point.
Yes.
You know, your work, you're not just throwing rice at the wall. You have a plan of attack of how you're going to do said whatever.
I throw spaghetti.
You throw spaghetti?
Yeah.
It's probably a good thing. You got to make sure it's cooked.
Oh, I forget about that.
Oh, okay.
I throw it against the wall, then I cook it.
Oh. But the other thing I was trying, because the guy that I was talking with at work about was talking about how, you know, he was talking about those early days when they were playing what for nobody. And I was just like, okay, well, you, in this sort of environment, you can't rule out the quote unquote luck factor.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a you do these steps you're gonna be successful.
Gives you a higher chance.
It gives you a higher possibility of success.
Yes.
That being said, that luck factor is still weighs super heavy.
Well, if you release that music, if you took the same music that is popular now and released it 20 years ago, it'd be mass rioting in the street. Fact. Practically, because it's not chopped and screwed rap. It's not, you know, teenage pop metal, and it's not like late 90s grunge metal, like that new metal sound.
Yeah.
So it's like, of course, if you drop today's music now or back then, 20 years ago even, it would not be accepted as, oh wow, this is amazing. It'd be like, why do they have 8 strings? Why do they have all that face paint? What are they trying to be, ICP?
Right.
So, you know, like, in ICP is always the banner of, why are you wearing paint on your face?
Well, and so when I started talking about him, that's the other thing he brought up, was the visual aspect of the band. And I told him, I said, that is another reason why people like them, because they have anonymity.
They're the same people that have a problem with that have no problem with Slipknot.
Right. That's exactly what I said. I said, so bands like Slipknot, bands like Ghost, I mean...
Gwar.
Fuck Gwar. Anyway, never mind. Disregard. I'm sure they're very nice people. Anyway. No, that's part of the story, right? That's part of the appeal to, like,
well, it's part of the mythos.
Exactly.
Of them worshiping saint of dreaming.
It makes you want to know more because you don't know anything about the people playing the music.
Yeah, and it's like you don't have to be involved in the narrative to enjoy their music. Well, but does that give you another reason to continue to listen to the music? Then yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong with creating something that is multifaceted and multi-layered.
Exactly. You know, and that's the biggest thing that I told him. I said, well, I get it. You're probably in the camp of, you know, oh, they should just get up there and play music, dress like your next door neighbor. It's like, well, nobody wants to go see their next door neighbor up on stage.
No.
They want to see a performance. They want to have, like you said, that mythical aspect to the band.
And the singer for Sleep Token put in a lot of work on his vocals.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you listen back to those tracks in like 2014, 15, 16, 17 even, they are nothing. He still sounds the same, but the quality and his overall performance aspect is much improved.
Yeah, his control, his breath, everything is significantly.
And that drummer is pretty freaking sick. Because I was watching his video on Drumeo.
Oh, dude!
I was like, this is pretty legit, and it's not super complicated grooves. But the fact of it is how impactful drums are into an overall sound to convey, like, this is the build, this is the drop, this is the last course, you know. It kind of is another thing that conveys that emotion of where are we at? Are we halfway through the story? Are we at the beginning of the story? Is this the climax of the story? You know, is this the sweet epilogue at the end? Is this the sad epilogue at the end? So on and so forth. So when people discount drums as, oh, it's just high boots and cats, you know, it's like, no, like, that is just as much a performance as the guitar and the singing and the piano and so on. And like, one of my favorite drummers of all time, Stuart Copeland.
Oh, yeah.
The Police.
Mm-hmm.
Was a true, like, a percussionist purely at heart. And it's like, the same people that crap all over Stuart Copeland are the same people that love Neil Peart. And it's like, I get it, but at the same time, Stuart Copeland was literally running around a cage playing everything from marimba to vibraphone to the bells to a drum set. Just insane what he was doing. I was like, if you don't like Stuart Copeland, but you like Tommy Lee, we got issues.
Reminds me of that Talladega Nights where he's advertising everything. If you don't like Stuart Copeland, fuck you. Anyway, the thing that I've always tried to tell people is, especially in a band, there's no one thing that makes the song. It's this culmination of everything. Like you said, whether like even stuff that people don't think about. If you have a super awesome, like, groovy melody that's going on under a verse with bass, take that bass line out and see how that verse sounds now. It's going to be like, oh, this is...
Well, I just saw something with, imagine if you just had Tim Henson's playing in Polyphia.
Right.
But no one else.
Right. You
would it be cool? Yeah, sure, of course. But...
would it sound like a kid that's sitting at a Guitar Center is being annoying? Probably.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still be impressive. I mean, an impressive player, but it's... at the end of the day, what makes a song is the ensemble. And the ensemble, depending on how they are selling themselves, are they selling themselves as more of a virtuoso type band?
Yeah.
Like Polyphia? Yeah. Or are they selling themselves as a story-driven narrative like Sleep Token?
Yeah.
Or is it, we're going to tell soft stories and we're going to tell, you know, very intricate, light lyrics. You know, even like Queen was doing that with like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, he had a full, complete thought of what Bohemian Rhapsody was going to be. It's like, if you like Bohemian Rhapsody and you don't like other story-driven music, that's fine. But realize that this is not a new thing.
No, no.
And yeah. So do not hate it just because it's new.
No.
So...
And that's the biggest thing for me. If you're a musician out there wondering why you're not making it, quote-unquote, ask yourself, what value are you bringing to the audience whenever you release a song, besides the music itself? Because the music itself is the standard.
Yeah.
That's what it is. The standard is you write a good song. Everything else that goes into that part of the other side of it, presenting yourself, selling yourself, showing off, you know, your marketing ability and your storytelling ability, or, I mean, even something as simple as a quick video of you being like, hey, I wrote this song about a hard time in my life. Guess what? Everyone watching that has had a hard time in their life.
Well, I mean, the more that you can identify music with your own personal story, it's going to make it more effective for that consumer.
100%.
I mean, I hate to be so scientific with it, but I mean, it's just a simple fact. I did have one quick aside, though.
What's your aside?
I'm about 99.9% sure that Chris Stapleton stole pretty much the entire music of Etta James and just slapped Tennessee Whiskey over it.
Hot take.
Because Etta James, and this was completely by random, this wasn't like anything crazy, but Etta James made a song called I'd Rather Go Blind.
Okay.
That's like, I'm pretty sure it was like the 70s. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm not going to sit here and look it up right now. But before Tennessee Whiskey, clearly.
Sure. You don't know that, though.
If, well, Tennessee Whiskey is... more than likely, I think it's a David Allan Coe cover anyways.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
But if you listen to the beginning of I'd Rather Go Blind,
mm-hmm.
and you listen to the beginning of Tennessee Whiskey, it is almost 100% the same thing.
Well, and here's the only devil's advocate part that I would say to that, is there's only 12 notes.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, even like the little slides
for each, where it gets tricky.
Like the little flourishes are almost exactly the same.
Well, see, that's
I mean, I'm not talking about chord structure.
Yeah,
chord
structure.
Yeah, there's going to be certain similarities between a lot of songs. I mean, there's only 12. There's a bunch of different chord shapes, and there's different ways to make them pretty and more dirty or whatever. But
in like day, there's 12 chords. Notes.
Dirty chords.
I like dirty chords.
Naughty dirty chords. Anyways, but the fact that it literally has the same lead lines, and it rocked my world there for a minute, because I was like, damn, this is like... Vanilla Ice close.
No, we just sampled it. Sampled it from what? The song that we're telling you that you stole this fucking bass line from? No, we just sampled it. Okay. Anyway, that's all you got to do these days, kids. Just sample it. You know? Find a hit song and sample it. You'll be successful.
Or just, you know, famous quotes and then call yourself Kill Whitney Dead.
Yeah. Well, we kind of got off on a good tangent, but it is another quote unquote new pedal day ish. Got it a few weeks or a few days ago, but
yeah, ordered 3 months ago.
Yeah. Let's talk about the
Nauticlon.
The long awaited Nauticlon.
By JHS.
By JHS. I'll tell you what. I'm gonna before you get into it. I got just a quick little thing. I plugged it in. You will not believe it. It sounds exactly like I thought it was going to. And you know what? Not impressed. Because I'm not impressed with Klons.
Yeah.
They sound like Klons.
Yeah.
There's no unicorn dust or whatever you got in the circuit. No. Hey, and you know what? You didn't put the goop on it, and guess what it still sounds like?
A Klon. A
fucking Klon.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, it was like, you gotta wait 24 hours for it to dry, and I was like, screw that. And I was like, that can stay in its bottle. I don't care.
We can find other things to goop.
Yeah, like I said, that stupid pedal idea that I have. But anywho. Now, I mean, does it do the thing that it says it does?
Yes.
Clearly. Without even trying. And having the little boost switch on it.
Yeah.
It does the Klon thing. Okay? Cool. Here's my big problem. That PCB board that you have to take apart, where you have to, I had to get needle nose pliers and snap the board apart. This thing only comes with, I think it's a 6-month limited warranty, and it's only on defects out the box.
Yeah.
Like you plugged it in with a 9-volt adapter and it just didn't work. So if you ended up snapping this apart and there was any failure of the manufacture process, now I can't speak for JHS, don't work for JHS. I have nothing to do with JHS other than I like their stuff. I'm not 100% sure that they would cover it if you accidentally snapped the board in half.
No, and that's what I was about to bring up, is that something like with the DIY banner. Sort of,
yeah.
DIY, because you're not really DIYing anything. No. But that's the one thing, and I think that's why they have that 6-month
Well, I mean, warranty. I would.
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, all you'd have to do is like, oh, crap, I was an idiot, and I took the circuit board, and instead of breaking it at the point where it says to break, I flipped it the other way and snapped it in half.
Well, the only problem with that is that whenever I was trying to break the tabs off the end, the whole thing was flexing.
Well, yeah.
Like, I mean, it was on there. Like, it's not like it was half a second away from popping off. It was like, I really had to lay into it to get it to break apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, and people were like, well, it's a novelty. And I was like, not if you're selling it as a full release pedal.
Yeah.
It's not a novelty if it's a full release pedal. If it's a novelty, you sell it as a novelty, the thing probably be $20 to go buy.
Sure.
But it was cool. I did it. I will never do it again.
Yeah.
I don't care what they sell or whoever sells what. I'll never do this crap again. Because you don't have any anti-static. So if it dies, it dies. If you break it in half, it's dead. And the only way to replace it is to buy another one and wait on another waiting list for right now. Because they're still trying to get all their orders done. So it's like, I get it. It's cool. It does its thing. I'm happy with the purchase overall. I will never do this ever, ever again.
You know what? I don't know JHS very much. I don't pay attention to a whole lot of stuff from them. I would have loved to have seen this just in a 3 series.
If they did it a 3 series and charged $40 more.
Right.
For a built pedal with a 2-year warranty. I'm pretty sure it is. It's either 2 or 3. I would have been absolutely over the moon, and that would have been the one I would have ordered.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's the thing. Like, I could totally justify, because what are the 3 series? 99, right?
Yes.
I could totally justify paying $150 for that exact enclosure already pre-made from the manufacturer. No problem at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, like I said, as far as the sound goes, we've already said that. It sounds like a Klon. It's cool. It's, but I don't know. For me, I don't want to have to build. If I'm going to build a pedal, it's going to be from the ground up.
Yeah.
It's not going to be from oh, cool, I have everything on the circuit board preassembled. Now I have to
assemble it.
Like,
I'm doing the same. Like, as long as it took me, the people probably working there could have gotten it done in probably like a third of the time. Seriously.
Easy. Yeah.
I mean, the longest thing, or the thing that took me the longest, other than snapping the board apart, was just going to go find my tools since I just moved.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I found the tools, I was able to snap it apart and we were good. But man, when I tell you, I was like sweating freaking bullets, because I've had LEDs on boards crack from messing with them. I've had pins get moved out of the way in a certain way, and like the little, like the pins on the actual two boards, I mean, they're tiny. So it's like, you fold one of those over, you break a pin, guess what? You have $100 nothing. You have $100 enclosure of nothing.
It's not a nothing.
It goes from not a clon to not a nothing. So, or not an anything. How about that?
Not an anything.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, and like I said, do I know all of JHS's return policy? No, of course not. I'm not some psychopath.
Right.
But, you know, I read all the terms and conditions.
Well, you probably wouldn't have any subscriptions or anything if you read all the terms and conditions of everything.
Please sell all my data to India so they can scam me every single day of the week.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Facebook.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's cool. I don't know, man. I said it earlier in the show. I personally, as a player, just focus on playing.
Yeah.
The gear is cool. I like to get on and see new releases. But every time I see like this, something like the Nauticlon or the Bad Monkey or the Germanium Tumnus, I'm just like, guys, nobody fucking cares. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Like, it's a box with circuits
that you can buy off the internet for $1.99.
Exactly. The best thing that I ever saw as far as Klon stuff goes was that fucking Andertons video when they had the Germanium Tumnus.
Oh, that was hilarious.
And they switched between...
They had the two Klons, the Germanium, dude, and the gold.
And you literally just loop switcher, or loop one, loop two, loop three, or loop four.
Congratulations.
They all sound the same. Like, oh, God, thank you. But then still, people, oh, no, actually, with the foot. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Listen, like, the main thing that I take away from this is, A, I will never do this again.
Yeah.
It was not... Is it worth it to get a pedal? Yes, because that's what a 3 series would have costed.
Sure.
But if you're going to charge me a 3 series price for a incomplete pedal, then add $20 to it and I'll just have it completed.
Or like you said, add 40.
Or there'd add be, 40 or there, 50 there'd and be, call it a day.
There'd be no problem with me with that pedal right there, pre-assembled. I would definitely pay $150
well,
for that.
Well, how
pedal.
Much was the... Is the Tumnus $199 or $189?
The Tumnus, the Germanium one was $170.
Okay. What about the gold?
$150.
Okay. So, yeah. Right in that same ballpark. Right. So, and again, if you're going to make it look like a 3 series pedal, then sell it as a 3 series, or don't sell it as a 3 series and just step it up one notch. You could have sold the same thing for that 220 range that typically the Sweet Tea and the Double Barrel,
sure, yeah.
Stuff like that is in, or the 180, which is like, I think that's where the Pack Rat is and the Bonsai. You could have sold it just in there with whatever that random artwork. You could have even sold it in a white enclosure with that artwork on it, and that would have been more than enough to satisfy a built pedal by a premium manufacturer without the gimmick.
Yeah. Well, and I think...
when you make it a gimmick and you sell it as a gimmick, I don't understand the thought process behind selling it as a gimmick, but you still want to have it treated as a real pedal.
The problem is, and I don't think anybody at JHS, you could tell just by the videos they put out after it, expected... that sort of madness to happen.
I don't see how you could or how you could not expect it. They released a video about a Digitech Bad Monkey, a pedal that came out in like the late 2000s around there, and was selling on Reverb for like $30, and they had people buying them for over $200 within one video. If you have that big of a following, do not be surprised when people buy the stuff that you sell them.
No,
but if you're going to sell it, you can do whatever you want. But this is definitely a first and last time, and I don't really care to ever see it again. Yeah. I don't want that to become a norm. Yeah. I don't want people to sell pedals halfway done with substandard warranties that maybe a full gigging cycle you might find, oh, the actual button craps out after 200 clicks, or oh, you know, it was an inferior solder point and it arced and it killed the pedal. I don't want to deal with that crap.
Yeah, for sure.
Be honest with you.
No, I get it. Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, I personally hope that you're right and they do not continue down this quasi DIY assembly route, because for instance, like Catalan Bread makes a few pedals, or one pedal in particular, I can't remember what it is, I'm pretty sure it's a drive, that you actually assemble everything.
Yeah,
you don't, there's no like, oh, you just clip, you know, circuit board in and you know hook up the whatever. You are doing soldering. You're putting the components in it. Now, that being said, it's sort of just like a Stumac kit.
Right.
Within a sense. But it's just by Catalan Bread, you know. Which, for me, getting a kit off of Stumac and building something from the ground up is way more fulfilling to me than just putting a circuit board and some knobs on a pedal.
Well, I mean, and a lot of times you can change those parts out for something else that'll make it a little bit different. It'll make it more, it will be your thing that you made.
Yeah. Like one of the things that I wanted to do, a friend of mine, you know, I've wanted to do the shootout video between like a King of Tone and Stumac has a,
yeah, it's like a Mojo King or something like that.
Whatever it is, you know, just to see what the difference is. Because I already know what it is. It's the difference is that Analog Man only makes a certain amount every year, and that's why they're, you know, on a list that you have to wait for 4 years, 5 years now, or whatever it is. But it's all, like I've said before, it's all the same stuff. It's math, it's circuits, it's metal enclosures.
Well, it's like the Klon KTR.
Yeah.
I mean, that's on a, like, the, I don't even remember what the wait list is up to, but I know it's stupid high by now.
It's dumb. But the one thing we can both agree on is that the Dracaris is the new Klon of distortions.
Yeah, because, like, even I saw a video recently about the Rev G3.
Oh, yeah.
I like the Rev pedals. It's not a Dracaris. Sorry. Like, it's still, to me, if I'm looking for a high-gain distortion, then I want something that sounds high-gain. I want it to make it sound like it's a SLO. Like, I'm not looking for, oh, that's sort of distortion, or, hey, you can take a DS1 and shove it into a Rev and make it sound like high-gain distortion. Dracaris.
Yeah.
Like, it to me, like, there's pedals that come along that end up being the standard of what I think of when I think of a certain, like, if it's a trim or if it's a, which I really don't get into those, because it's like saying a King of Course. It's like, it's all the same. It's literally the same pedal sold to you 25 times now.
You know, but, I like a KOC.
Yeah. I'm just going to go with my CE, was it the CE2 or CE3?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll just go with the CE and call it a day. That's obviously what I was thinking of when I was thinking of the tuner, was a Course pedal.
That would have been cool to have up front, first thing in the mix. first thing.
Yeah.
A chorus pedal into a drop pedal.
Yeah. I do the chorus, then I do phaser, then I do the drop pedal, and then I put that all in the front of my amp.
You're forgetting you need to have a reverb at the very beginning too.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you have two reverbs because one reverb is not enough.
That's never enough.
Yeah, no. If you don't have reverb on your amp, then fuck you.
No, it's good though, man.
I also put my wah pedal through my effects loop.
Oh, do you? That's cool. Hey, in all seriousness, you know what is a really cool combination that nobody uses? Is distortion followed by wah. It's not practical in traditional circumstances, but the way that a wah will sweep that filter with the distortion going into it, you can get some wild shit that comes out of it. Yeah, that being said,
wild, like W-Y-L-D-E.
That being said, though, I'm not going to put two wahs on my board, having one before and one after. I'm just saying. If you're in a pinch for like recording and you want a weird filtered sweep that you can control, it's super rad.
Well, I just put a wah pedal after every other pedal.
Oh, just so nice.
I've got wah tuner, wah distortion, wah compressor, wah fuzz, wah multi effects, wah cable, wah then front of amp, and then the speaker cable leading to the actual speakers from the back. It goes that, and then three wahs in a row, and then back into the speakers.
Okay, listen, hear me out.
I'm the king of wah. call me Mikey Wah.
Mikey Wah. I want to do that now. We need to find a massive pedal board and do every other pedal as wah.
I think I have like five wah pedals or four.
I have two. We can make this happen. Okay. Good place to cut for here today. We're going to go make a pedal board with eight wahs on it. And we'll get back to you guys on that. But for Mike and myself, take it easy. We'll check you guys next week on Man the Help Podcast.